I'm Matthew Smith, Vermont Edition producer, and I wanted to let you know that the podcast you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity. Thanks for listening and enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinsel. 242 years ago on this date, August 16th, 1777, there was a key battle that many historians think had an enormous impact on the outcome of the Revolutionary War. Although the actual fighting took place in New York State, the event is known as the Battle of Bennington, and this day has become a state holiday in Vermont. Why was this such an important battle? How did it change the course of the Revolutionary War? And how did a bunch of militia from Vermont, New Hampshire, and Massachusetts defeat the British Army, which was thought to be the greatest military force in the world at that time? Well, today on Vermont Edition, we'll look at the history of the Battle of Bennington with Steve Perkins, who's the executive director of the Vermont Historical Society. Steve, welcome back to Vermont Edition.
Happy to be here.
And we really appreciate you being on the program for what is a state holiday for you. So, Steve, let's start with an overview of what was happening during the summer of 1777 so we can put the Battle of Bennington in some context. The British are eager to end the Revolutionary War, and General John Burgoyne has a strategy that he thinks will put an end to the American uprising. Tell us about it.
Sure. So you've got Burgoyne, and he's been around here for about a year hanging out in Canada, and he had this idea that he put out in the coffee houses of London, without really even being in what later became the United States, that he would cut the head off the snake of this uprising. And by the head, he meant New England. And he had this idea that if he started in Canada and he came down the Champlain Valley, General Howe, who was in New York City, would come up the Hudson River, and then a smaller force under Colonel Barry St. Leger would come down the Mohawk River. They would all meet roughly at Albany, and by doing this, they would take and they would isolate New England from the rest of the colonies kind of a divide and conquer and quickly end the American Revolution. So at this time, summer of 1777, St. Leger was coming down the Mohawk River, and Burgoyne was working his way down from Canada. The one piece of the plan that didn't quite work out was General Howe was in New York, and he said, "Nah, I'm not going to come north." He stayed right there in New York City.
So, given that fact, did Burgoyne know that Howe was not going to be part of the plan?
He did not until he was well on his way down Lake Champlain. Now, this summer of 1777, it was really tough on these British troops. It was a big force. They came down the lake unopposed, but they came with very few provisions. They were very lightly provisioned. He felt that all of these colonists living up and down Lake Champlain would come out because they really felt strongly that they wanted to come back to the crown, and they would give him horses, they would give him food. And so he even had all of this dismounted cavalry with him, carrying their saddles and carrying all of their tack in anticipation that they would receive mounts along the way. Now, of course, this didn't happen, and all along the way, trees were felled in his way. People were burning their crops, driving the cattle out of the way. So they were very short on ammunition. They didn't have horses, and so they were hurting. Of course, they pushed the Americans out of Mount Independence and Fort Ticonderoga, really because it was lightly defended, and started pushing their way overland down towards Albany.
So, Steve, you're talking about this large British force coming down Lake Champlain. Hopefully, from their point of view, they're going to meet up with other British troops in Albany. Tell us a little bit about the British Army at that point. Aren't there a lot of hired German soldiers as part of that force?
Yeah, really, the bulk of that force is hired German forces. And this is pretty standard for a lot of the American Revolution and pretty standard for warfare at that time. You know, we have to remember that George III here was only a couple generations removed from being a German prince anyway. So there were a lot of connections on the continent. And so, yeah. yes, the British would hire troops from these various German municipalities. I think one thing we often hear, we've heard in our old history textbooks, we called them Hessians. Well, Hesse is an area of Germany, and actually not many of the troops within Burgoyne's army were Hessian. The artillerymen were Hessian. The bulk were from Brunswick, so were Brunswickers.
So here you've got Burgoyne coming down. He's got a huge army. He has virtually no supplies, no horses, needs ammunition. And he hears that there's a great stash of supplies in Bennington. And everything that I think he feels he needs to put his army back on its feet. So does he decide to send a party over there?
He does. He sends a party over with two goals. The party is under Colonel Friedrich Baum, and the idea was to secure horses, food, everything, ammunition. He was low on ammunition to support his army. And then Baum's troops were expected to then continue on down into New England, almost a feint, so that it would start to pull some of the troops that were gathering around Albany for its defense off into New England to defend, say, you know, Boston or eastern Massachusetts. But as we know, Baum didn't even make it to Bennington.
And at that point, is Burgoyne getting some reconnaissance information that there really aren't very many revolutionary troops guarding Bennington?
Up until this point, he has heard that there's really no one there. The main American army, of course, was retreating from Mount Independence to Albany to defend Albany, which was a main colonial center at the time. We know that there was the Battle of Hubbardton, which was a rear guard action, really the only Revolutionary War battle to happen on what's now Vermont soil. The British won that battle, but it delayed them enough so that the Americans could escape. His idea, the Americans were all headed to Albany. So he thought the road was open through Bennington and on into New England.
Today in the program, we're looking at the Battle of Bennington. It's a state holiday in Vermont. Our phone number, 1-800-639-2211. Let's talk to Dale, who's calling from Starksboro. Hi, Dale. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. Great show. I grew up in that area, and I always was told that the battle didn't take place in Bennington, Vermont, but took place in Hoosick. Is that true?
Steve, that's one of the great questions a lot of people have about the Battle of Bennington. Why is it known as the Battle of Bennington when it did take place 5 or 10 miles away in Hoosick?
Well, of course, in our narrative, we're right at that point. You know, in some ways, it may be easier to call it the Battle for Bennington. Bennington was where these troops were headed. The storehouse at Bennington was their goal, and the army, which was made up of mostly New Hampshire troops, some Massachusetts, and then the Vermont or Bennington Council on Safety, small militiamen from Vermont. They rode out and they met Baum, like you said, in Hoosick, New York, and that's where the battle took place.
And so you have a situation, if I understand it correctly, that retired Continental Army Colonel John Stark decides not just to wait in Bennington and have the fight take place there, but he goes out to intercept the British troops before they arrive?
That's true. I mean, so what happened was Baum comes along the road, which roughly followed the Wolumsac River from the region north of Albany over towards Bennington, and he was met. And there were a number of skirmishes on the 14th and the 15th, so the couple of days leading up to the battle. So Stark knew where Baum was. Baum was starting to realize that there was a large army ahead of him, not just a small militia group. And so by the time we got to, you know, the evening of the 14th, Baum actually started building emplacements on the heights over the Wolumsac River in Hoosick. He was not going any further. In some ways, Stark could have waited for him, but Baum figured with a larger army, Stark was going to come to him. So Baum started building these emplacements, these defensive works in Hoosick. So Stark, you know, came out to defeat him.
And then there's a stretch of bad weather.
Yeah, so the 15th was a muddy, wet day. Really, this battle could have happened on the evening of the 14th or even on the day of the 15th, but it didn't, because at the time you didn't fight battles in the pouring rain. Powder didn't work. Men got stuck in mud. So they all waited, and they waited until the 16th. And finally, when the weather cleared and it dried up, that's when the battle took place.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to John, who's calling from Bellows Falls. Hi, John. Welcome to the program.
Hello. Thank you for having me on.
Sure.
Here's a question about General Stark and his activities that day. There's quite a legend, even to the point that a road got named after it, that as he approached the Redcoats, he said to his troops, "Yonder are the Redcoats, and they are ours, or tonight Molly Stark sleeps a widow." How do we know that he actually said that, or was that just a story that was made up later on to create a little more romance around the battle?
We don't have any evidence that he said it. Of course, we don't have video or audio from the time. There are many myths and legends that grew up around the Battle of Bennington, and it really was used as one of the formation stories for the state of Vermont, and you always have to have great stories to go along with that. You know, as a seasoned general, first in the British Army and then in the American Army, I'm sure he gave a pep talk to the troops before they headed out there. Whether he said, you know, "We defeat them," or "Molly Stark sleeps a widow," you know, who knows? But it's gone down as one of those great speeches in American history.
Let's talk to John, who's calling from Westport, New York. Hey, John, what's on your mind today?
Hey, thanks, guys. Family legend has it that there are some ancestors of ours who fought and died in the battle, and I was just wondering what resources might be available to substantiate that.
The best place to go for that would be the Revolutionary War pension records, and those can be – a lot of them are online now. And there's a number of cards at the Bennington Museum that relate to those pension records. So if you want to go dig through actual paper records, that's a good place to go. And it's totally slipping my mind. There was a book that was written probably about 10 years ago about the participants in the Battle of Bennington. But after the American Revolution, what then became the United States had to said they would pay money to those that fought. And so they started to fill out cards, and they had to tell their story. And it's a very rich historical set of documents, and it's the best place to find information about those that served. Because the Battle of Bennington was fought by an irregular American force, there's not a lot of official U.S. documentation of the battle itself.
And in fact, Steve, we got a email from Polly, who wrote us telling us that the Henry Sheldon Museum in Middlebury has a pension application by Sally Kellogg Markham that contains her memories of General Stark's troops in Bennington before and after the battle. And that pension application reads, "We lived about 3 miles north of the Bennington Meeting House, about 2 miles south of where the battle was fought. My father volunteered his services to fight under Stark. I saw all Stark's men pass by my father's house just at dusk. The next morning was August 16th, 1777, and at about 8 o'clock in the morning, the battle began, and my father was in the battle, which I can now prove by one living witness where we lived." A lot of fascinating historical documents available from the Battle for Bennington. Steve, we have a question from Deb in West Brattleboro, and Deb asks, "Did Benedict Arnold have any connection to the Battle of Bennington?"
Well, the short answer is no. The slightly longer answer is that Benedict Arnold was leading troops over in central New York at the Battle of Fort Stanwix. So you remember I had mentioned this guy, Colonel Barry St. Leger, who brought a British force down the Mohawk River, and he was part of that kind of three different armies that were to meet at Albany. Well, he was stopped at Fort Stanwix, which is near Rome, New York, by Benedict Arnold. So St. Leger didn't make it to Albany either because Benedict Arnold stopped him.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Today we're looking at the Battle of Bennington. With us, Steve Perkins, the executive director of the Vermont Historical Society. Steve, you know, in researching this issue, and I think for a lot of people who take a look at it, they just wonder, how is it possible that several thousand militia from Vermont, New Hampshire, and Massachusetts are able to hold their own against what is thought to be the greatest army in the world?
Well, you know, numbers certainly help. General Stark had about 2,000 men, and they knew the land. These guys, not counting the New Hampshire army that came off, but the militiamen from western Massachusetts, the militiamen from Vermont were defending their homes. They were defending their farms. They knew every tree, every, you know, creek. And I think that really helped them. Now, of course, the, you know, Baum only had 800 troops. The bulk of his troops were dismounted cavalry. So these guys were wearing big, tall boots. They were carrying long, heavy cavalry swords that, you know, could drag in the mud. They weren't used to being infantrymen. So we had dismounted cavalry, some artillerymen, some loyalist troops, and Native American allies. And language was an issue between all of these troops. Some only spoke German, some only spoke English. So commanding that was a little hard for Baum. Baum decided to emplace his troops, and this allowed the Americans to use their knowledge of topography and really surround the British emplacement. And they attacked all at the same time. And right around 3 o'clock in the afternoon on the 16th, the Americans attacked all at once. And really, you take 2,000 guys and you run them from all angles at these British troops. It was over very quickly. Almost all of the British were either killed or captured.
But then fate steps in again and the battle is not quite over?
No, the battle's not quite over. We have to remember we had this rainy day on the 15th. And during the day on the 15th or even in the evening of the 14th, I can't recall the exact time, Baum's going, oh, shoot, there's really 2,000 people here opposing me. So he sends back to Burgoyne. He says, you need to send me more troops. So Burgoyne sends another column of troops, infantry this time, under Colonel Braymon. That was about 600 troops or so, but this weather held them up. So they're running as fast as they can from Burgoyne's army on their way over to this battlefield. The mud and the rain held them up, so they didn't get there in time for that 3 o'clock battle. But as the American troops are rounding up their prisoners, probably celebrating, having a good time, this column of well-disciplined infantry comes down the road and attacks them and really was starting to defeat them. So you had a well-ordered troop of 600 men pushing down this road and was pushing these Americans back. And we thought, oh my goodness, this battle is going to turn around and the Americans are going to get defeated. Here's where Seth Warner comes in. So Seth Warner and the Green Mountain Boys, who had just fought at the Battle of Hubbardton, they're running down from Manchester. The Green Mountain Boys, small group of men, but battle-hardened men, arrive on the scene and they help Stark and Warner reform the American troops, and they're able to counterattack against Braymon, push him back, and turn his retreat then into a rout, sending them running all the way back to Burgoyne. And this is happening just as dusk is falling, 7-8 o'clock at night on the 16th.
Let's go back to our listeners and talk to Mike, who's calling from Hinesburg. Hey, Mike, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
What's Hello? On your mind today? Yep, we can hear you.
Yes, I was lucky enough to meet Richard Ketchum, the author of American History, before he died. And the first book of his I read was Saratoga, which details Burgoyne's campaign. In speaking to Dick, he did mention that Burgoyne went up the Boquette River to the Boquette Falls and camped there for a number of days, and that no one has gone back to excavate that area. And the historian at Saratoga said there'd be plenty of artifacts in and around the Boquette River waterfalls, if one was interested. So it's just a little sidebar story.
Mike, thanks very much. Steve, are you aware of that?
I am not. I'll pass that on to our colleagues in New York State and the archaeological department there.
Well, this is certainly a big weekend in the Bennington area as folks celebrate the 242nd anniversary of the Battle of Bennington. And as we've been discussing on the program today, this was a pivotal battle in the Revolutionary War and upended the British strategy of trying to geographically divide the 13 colonies. So what's planned for this weekend and why has this become such an important holiday in southwestern Vermont? I had a chance to talk to Matt Harrington, who is the executive director of the Bennington Regional Chamber of Commerce, and asked him about this weekend celebration.
It's a three-day fanfare of all things that we love about the Bennington Battle, as well as Vermont. The Bennington Battle Monument and other state historic sites are all free to the public all day long. Right around 4 p.m., they're going to do an old-fashioned chicken barbecue at the Bennington Fire Department, and they say that's until the food runs out. And then they're going to do a silent auction from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. There's going to be a car cruise at the Bennington Fire Department. We kick right back off on Saturday with a Battle Day 5K road race and celebration, which will end up at the monument. That starts at 9:30. Every year, we do a wreath-laying ceremony at the USS Bennington Memorial Service, which is right there at Bennington Town Office. That's at 12. And then Sunday, that final day where we celebrate the big battle, we'll have the Bennington Battle Day Parade that starts at 12:30. We've been doing it for many, many years now. There's also battlefield tours, which is very interesting. So if you're a history buff, get yourself up to the Bennington Battlefield located over in Hoosick. And then we wrap up with a guided history tour, which is actually one that I'm kind of interested in. At 7 p.m. on Sunday night, there's a guided historic walk all around Monument Avenue between the monument and the old First Church, and then it'll be guided by historians and architects as well.
So, Matt, why do you think it's important to celebrate this aspect of Vermont history?
It's a bunch of militiamen, volunteers, that banded together and fought off this great big invading army. And so, you know, I just think it really resembles the DNA and what Vermonters are made of, which is really community-based, volunteer-based, helping out, lending a hand. And so, you know, as much as we celebrate the battle, we also celebrate people's volunteerism and the militia as well.
Matt, I have to imagine that the battlefield tours are very popular and really a great way for folks to understand the dynamics of what actually took place on August 16th of 1777.
Yeah, and those fields are open throughout the year, especially in the summertime, but it's very interesting. It's the only holiday in the state that we get off for a local battle. Normally, we're taking off for national holidays, but this is actually a state holiday, so a lot of people do get Bennington Battle Day off for its significance.
I also have to believe there's also a lot of interest in the Bennington Battle Monument itself. Tell us about it.
Just last week, we had Governor Scott up there looking out over. It's a fascinating 306-foot monument. It's the largest standing structure in all of Vermont. And we were actually talking with the governor about a 250th celebration that's going to be coming up in the next decade for the Battle of Bennington. It was constructed as a monument to celebrate the bravery and the courage that many people in Bennington County showed at that point in the war. And we have, I think it's like 30,000 people a year come and visit that monument.
For more information about all of the activities that are planned for this weekend, you can go to Bennington.com/Battle Day. We'll also have that link at our website as well. Matt Harrington is the executive director of the Bennington Regional Chamber of Commerce. Matt, many thanks for being part of the program today.
Thanks so much for having me, Bob.
So, Steve, you explained to us sort of the second battle of Bennington that took place late that afternoon and early that evening. So Burgoyne's army is pretty well decimated at this point, isn't it?
Well, he's lost about 1,000 troops. You know, no matter how big your army is, when you lose 1,000 troops, that's a pretty big deal. And I think for him, there was a morale drop as well because all of his existing troops were thinking, oh, great, we're going to get the food, we're going to get the supplies, we're going to get our horses, and all of that is gone. And to top it all off, 1,000 men are, you know, killed or captured.
And at the same time, am I correct that a number of Native Americans who had been fighting with the British said, that's it, we're going home?
He did lose a number of Native Americans as well. Actual documentation of how many, we're not sure. These are oral histories we're relying on for a lot of this. But certainly he lost Native American allies and lost Loyalist allies as well.
So Burgoyne really finds himself in a precarious situation, losing a lot of troops, having nothing to eat, no supplies. What happens next? It's a rather dramatic event.
He decides to push on. He's going to attack Albany, and he's met by the American army under Horatio Gates at Saratoga in October. And he is defeated. And this is the first major defeat of a full-size British army by the Americans in the American Revolution. And this is considered the turning point of our fight for independence. It proved to the French that we could win, and it brought the French in as our allies, which brought the French Navy in as a blockading force and French arms and French military advisors. And from then on, a seesaw back and forth. But as we know, ultimately, we won and became the United States of America.
Let's talk to Dave, who's calling from Braintree. Hey, Dave, welcome to the program.
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to make a comment and then ask a question. One of the things that a comment I wanted to make about militia was that the militia, yes, they were very effective at Bennington, but militia in the American Revolution had a pretty spotty record. They were rather terrible in the Long Island campaign, and they had some real advantages at Bennington because the German mercenaries were rather unprepared for what they were about to face. And so it was, there was some real, they had some really good luck at Bennington. But it's kind of a myth to think that American militia somehow destroyed the greatest army in the world. We actually lost more battles than we won, and so it's a you really have to have a realistic viewpoint of the value of militia during the Revolutionary War. And the question I wanted to ask was, what happened to the German prisoners? Do we have records of were they all repatriated? Did many of them become immigrants and settle in America?
There are some records of what happened to these German prisoners. Many of them were shipped off to Boston, where they gave their parole and spent the remainder of the war and headed back. But a good number of them did decide to stay in the United States, and they became American citizens after the war.
Steve, you were talking about how this was really a turning point in the war, the fact that the British troops could be defeated. What kind of impact does this have back with the military generals in London? Of course, it probably took them a couple of weeks to find out that this had happened. Did they just think this was unthinkable that they could lose a battle like this?
I think Burgoyne really set himself up as the savior of this conflict in this campaign, and he had to go back, with his hat in his hands and try to say and try to describe to the British military what happened and why. He ended up writing a whole book, and you can read that of what exactly happened and why, at least from his standpoint. So it was a blow. I don't think the British thought at this point that they were still going to lose. I think it made them take a step back. They still put resources into the war, but like I said, it brought the French in, and as the previous caller was saying, that just the militia alone weren't going to win this. But once we brought the French in on our side, it really turned the tide of the American Revolution.
And that's something that people involved in the American Revolution had been working on for some time, wasn't it? To bring the French in?
Oh, certainly. That was their goal, and I think the French were they were providing some arms, but they were waiting. They're going to see if this can really happen, because they didn't want to have another loss on the North American continent. I mean, a decade and a half before, they had just lost a major war on the North American continent with the British. I don't think they wanted to repeat that again.
Do you have any sense, Steve? What if? What if this battle had gone the other way and the British had been successful and roared into Bennington and gotten all the supplies that they needed and resumed their decision to head to Albany? What do you think might have happened?
Well, I suppose I could give you the Vermonter answer, and I could probably give you the realist answer. The Vermonter answer is, the revolution would have been lost. Burgoyne would have received all of the supplies he needed, and he would have won. I think realistically, this shortened the campaign, but ultimately, there probably weren't enough supplies in Bennington. This is a small colonial outpost to really supply an entire army. Burgoyne may have bomb coming through there, may have pulled some troops away from the American army. Burgoyne was in a pretty bad place. Howe wasn't coming up from New York. He didn't have those reinforcements. Leger was defeated, was not coming down the Mohawk. So he was by himself facing the American army at Saratoga. If I used my crystal ball and my Wayback Machine, I suspect Burgoyne still would have lost, but maybe not as quickly.
With us today, Steve Perkins, the executive director of the Vermont Historical Society, as we look at the Battle of Bennington. Your thoughts, 1-800-639-2211. Steve, in the Bennington Museum, there's a case called The Mythology of the Battle of Bennington. What is this all about?
Well, as I said before, this is not a very well-documented battle because it was fought between irregular forces. Really, some of the best documentation is by some of the German participants as regular German army. So everybody wanted a piece of this battle. And I think if we look at, why even do we celebrate the Battle of Bennington today? Why is it a Vermont state holiday? You have to look at Vermont yearning to be its own entity. Of course, in 1777, we've declared ourselves the Republic of Vermont. We're an equal to all of these other colonies. We're not subservient to New York. Remember, we're really kind of fighting with New York over the land that we claim as Vermont. And so this battle is something that we can point to saying, hey, New York had nothing to do with this battle. It was all about Vermont and our friends from New Hampshire and Massachusetts in winning this battle for New England. So we're going to claim it as our own. And everybody needs to have a part of that. So, yes, my family was a piece of the Battle of Bennington. And so you started to get all sorts of relics and, guns and stories started to come out of this battle, making it bigger than it even really was.
We got this email from Creighton who wrote, I'm curious to know why General Howe elected to remain in New York City. It appears that this decision was detrimental to the British cause.
Well, I would certainly point you towards, some much smarter writers than I on broader Revolutionary War history. But as far as I know, he didn't quite get along with Burgoyne, didn't like him and was going to make his own choices. And he decided to stay in New York. It was comfortable and he had enough Americans to fight down there.
See if we can get a quick call in from Peter in Montreal. Hi, Peter. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Sure. What's on your mind?
I would like to know if Burgoyne was from a French family, because I'm calling from Montreal and I keep hearing Burgoyne, and for me it sounds like a French family name.
As far as I know, he was generationally British and part of the aristocracy, but going back generations beyond that, I don't know.
All right, Steve Perkins, Executive Director of the Vermont Historical Society. One last question for you. Have you had a chance to go down to the battlefield?
I've been there many times. I lived down in Bennington for about 10 years, Bob, and it's a really interesting place. Part of it is open to the public, and there's a nice monument there, so you can walk parts of those fields. It was called the Dragoon Redoubt, or the Brunswick Redoubt is open to the public, so you can see that. And definitely take a trip to the top of the Bennington Battle Monument as well. It's a great, great visit.
Absolutely. Well, this has been a fascinating discussion about the Battle of Bennington. Steve Perkins is the executive director of the Vermont Historical Society. Steve, many thanks for coming in and telling us all about this important event.
My pleasure.